Are you struggling to lose weight and keep it off? Tired of wasting time and money on starvation diets that lead to more frustration and stress? If there was a weight loss solution that could actually work for you, would you try it? Then head to Golo.com.
I'm Steve. I lost 138 pounds in 9 months on Golo.
I'm Amber. I've lost 128 pounds with Golo taking release.
If you're ready to take back control of your life, head to Golo.com now and see how Golo can work for you. That's Golo.com.
My sleep is way better. My inflammation has gone way down. Golo saved my life. I was way overweight. That's what sent me down the path. I wanted to make sure and live for my kid.
I have literally tried everything. I was on the verge of getting gastric bypass surgery, and I saw the Golo commercial, and it was the last thing I tried because it worked.
Join over 2 million people who have found a better way to lose weight with Golo. Your healthier and happier life begins at Golo.com. That's Golo.com. Again, Golo.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, writing most recently defining ideas about climate justice. But now we learn that the Supreme Court justice is going to weigh in on an issue that was much talked about before the recent midterm election and now has come back because of decisions by federal courts, most recently the St. Louis-based 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which blocked the program intended by the White House to forgive certain percentages of student debt for certain kinds of people. There are a lot of details here, but just in general, student debt forgiveness. The injunction issued on November 14th by the St. Louis-based 8th U.S. Court of Appeals blocking the program will remain in place for now, as the Supreme Court has just come forward to say it will take up this decision in its winter period, which is, I understand, late February into early March. And I ask Richard to speculate, as he does wonderfully, about how the court will hear this, given the present presumption of the makeup of the court, six on the conservative side and three on the left of center side. How so, Richard?
Well, I think the first thing one understands is the fact that several lower courts have enjoined the program. Suggests that they believe there's a fairly substantial chance on the merits that this thing will be struck down. I think the reason why it goes to the Supreme Court is that the issue is simply too large to allow fractionated responses in different circuits to give slightly inconsistent hearing. Supreme Court is going to hear it, but I see nothing whatsoever about their decision to take the case to think that what they're going to do is to reverse the judgments that are made down below. If you start doing this stuff, the question here is this congressional action that authorizes this, or is this executive action that's unilateral? Joe Biden has a terrible track record on this situation. From the day in which he got into office, he has always thought that executive orders were the way in which to run business. And in many cases, when he puts these out, what he does is he finds some statute which he thinks gives him the authorization to start to deal with this. And there is no question that there is authorization of the United States to make certain kind of adjustments with respect to the way in which student loans and other programs have been done in the cases of emergencies. But you have to get yourself a definition of an emergency. And the ones that are used there is you have a declared war, you have an earthquake, you have something short, immediate, and disastrous. In this particular situation, what he says is that the emergency is the fact that we've just ended the COVID emergency. So literally within weeks of each other, one announcement says, oh, the COVID situation is sufficient to deal with this. But he turns around and he says that thing is gone. If you look at the program, compare the papers that were put out by the Trump administration and the very sloppy work that's being put out by the Biden administration, it's a no-brainer on the merits. If you get the court to look at this thing, there's no way that it can say that a statute which is designed to deal with short-term emergencies, allowing limited loan adjustments, is going to be parlayed into a situation where there's no emergency and that non-emergency is going to allow you to transfer $500 billion. Ms. Patel, the secretary of the new press secretary, she comes out and she says the thing, well, a lot of hard struggling Americans essentially are now going to be relieved of the debt. Well, you could say that about any debt. You know, you relieve people of their mortgage debts. What happens, of course, is there's a huge moral hazard. Those people essentially who paid off their debts are now going to have to pay off the debts of everybody else. So what you see in the part of the government is they have a wonderful story in which the only thing they tell you about are the benefits to the people who get better relief. They don't talk about the massive dislocations that are going to take place with respect to everybody else. And the whole question of equity between two sets of debtors, one of which has paid the debts off and one of which is not, what we now do is we say we're going to have those people who've been virtuous, they have to ante up yet a second time to help these other individuals. It's also clear that when the Biden administration did this, they were utterly reckless with respect to the kinds of numbers that they had. The eligibility requirements are not going to be all that clear. The huge amount of administrative discretion that they give to themselves to figure out who counts as a recipient and who doesn't makes this program absolutely rife for abuse. It doesn't look as though they have any systematic checks against this thing. So the whole thing is going to go to the Supreme Court as a hulking mass. And my guess is that they will strike it down. I don't see any reason to believe that this should be only a 6-3 vote. I think the legal case that has been put forward by the Biden administration is so threadbare that I think it's more likely than not that all 9 justices will come out the same way. At least I hope that would be what will happen.
And now we go to the tragedy of Ukraine conflict. The International Criminal Court launched an investigation into alleged war crimes against humanity and war crimes after the Moscow invasion began. But right now, the opinion is it does not have jurisdiction to prosecute aggression in Ukraine. So Ukraine is pressing for a special tribunal. We have this news from Europe that the European Union blesses this investigation. And the president of the European Commission, President Ursula von der Leyen, says, "We are ready to start working with the international community to get the broadest international support for this specialized court." Your opinion, Richard, about going forward with what appears to be a tribunal similar to what was set up following the Second War to try the Hitlerites war criminals. Is this something that is credible here in the 21st century, given our understanding of sovereignty?
Well, I think it's very enigmatic for another reason. The first thing you have to do is to win this war, and then you have to be able to have Putin to put him into custody. And the same thing with all of his henchmen. That is yet not done. So what they're talking about, at least in the short run, is trying to deal with these people in absentia. And the moment you start having in absentia trials, due process, the right to hear the other side, the right to defend yourself is going to be sharply questioned. So it may well be that the people who are concerned about these process issues are going to be very uneasy about a situation, because the word specialized can mean ad hoc, and the word ad hoc could mean unprincipled. And we don't know the way in which this thing is going out. Now, having said all of that, there's absolutely no excuse for anything that the barbarian who runs the Soviet Union, or Russia rather, Putin and his allies have done. Their behavior is beyond reprehensible. It is absolutely criminal by any kind of standard that you want. So that the only issue, as far as I'm concerned, is trying to figure out how to get some kind of credible institution to do this. I don't think you can do it through the International Court at The Hague. The reason is you don't get consent to be tried there. You're going to have the same problem with a specialized tribunal. And it may well be that what's going to happen is if Putin loses and somebody captures him, what they'll do is they'll send him off to the Ukraine and let them try him, which is, of course, both poetic justice on the one hand and a travesty of justice on the other hand. It's poetic justice because the people who suffered so much will be able to get a fair measure of revenge against somebody who has inflicted so much harm. But it's a bit tragic because the obvious bias on the part of the people running the trial is going to be perfectly apparent. All I can say about this stuff is it's in the talk stage now. They haven't made any kind of irrevocable mistake. They haven't made any kind of decision. I think, in effect, that the fact that they're willing to announce this kind of tribunal as a possibility should have some influence about the way in which things are done on the battlefield. And my view about the situation there is we've done a pretty good job, I think, both in Europe and the United States, in resisting what the Russians have done in the Ukraine. But I think we probably have to do more. What I would like to see happen is the talk about the tribunal will strengthen the willingness of the West to take even more aggressive steps against what the Russians have done in the Ukraine.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, writing of climate reparations, climate justice, and commenting on justice at the Supreme Court level about student loans and proposed justice for alleged war crimes. That's where we are in Ukraine. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Uncle Nearest is the most awarded bourbon and American whiskey for 2020, 2021, and 2022. Blended by four-time Master Blender of the Year, Victoria Edie Butler, the great-great-granddaughter of Nearest Green, the first known African-American master distiller. Proudly served throughout the United States in your favorite bar and restaurants. To find your location, visit us at UncleNearest.com. Please enjoy responsibly. Must be 21 years old to purchase. 50% alcohol by volume. Uncle Nearest Incorporated, Shelbyville, Tennessee.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.